From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris. And on this Thanksgiving, we're going to spend some time with a man known as Q to his friends. To the rest of us, he's Quincy Jones. Quincy Delight Jones Jr., to be exact. And it's been said his work sings for itself. He's arranged big band hits.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play.
He scored films.
In the heat of the night.
He's composed the signature sound for TV shows. And he's moved from hit.
It's my party and I cry if I want
to. To hit. To hit. It seems Quincy Jones has worked with everyone in music at some point. Count Basie, Bruce Springsteen, Ella Fitzgerald, Frank Sinatra, Paul Simon, Sarah Vaughan, Ray Charles, Michael Jackson, Cyndi Lauper, Nat King Cole, Ice-T. I could go on, but we simply don't have the time. That list is a testament to the diversity and the genius of his career.
And I've been very blessed and humbled about accepting advice and shutting up and listening to people that know what they're talking about because it's an amazing balance of science and soul.
And staying power. He's managed to be the coolest cat in any room for more than six decades. And at age 75, he now has a new book about his career, The Complete Quincy Jones, My Journey and Passions. It's not a typical autobiography. There's already been one of those. It's more like a scrapbook filled with photos, ticket stubs, sheet music, and memories. He joined me to reminisce about his life in music and where it all started, in Chicago.
The affluent section, no, no.
You were rich in other ways, though.
Oh, give me a break, honey. We lived in the heart of the ghetto, you know. Gangsters, nothing but gangsters. Back in the 30s, it was all I ever saw with machine guns and stogies and big piles of money on the lights.
You saw all this?
That's all, as a kid, that's all I saw. I wanted to be a gangster till I was 11. Are you kidding?
In your book, you tell the story, you say that they pinned my hand to a wooden fence with a switchblade.
That's
when I
right.
was 7 years old. Who was they? What
they,
did they do to
is
you?
Being on the wrong block. If you went on the wrong street and didn't have the right call, you'd get a switchblade through your hand. I was 7 years old.
And they literally pinned your hand to a fence?
Yeah, and with a switchblade. Now, also, an ice pick in my temple. That's real fun.
They held it to your temple, or did they actually?
No, they stuck it in my temple.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. I got the scar right, but my medal's to prove it here.
How did you get out of Chicago?
Capone ran the Jones boys out because they didn't know they were making so much money. And they ran into Mexico, and my dad came and got my brother and I at the barbershop the next day and took us on a trailway bus, no toys, and went straight to the Northwest. He worked in Bremerton Navy Yard during the World War II, and then we went to Seattle 2 years later.
Now, that's where you met up with Ray Charles.
That's right, exactly. Exactly. Oh. You got your homework.
Well, I did my homework.
You sure did.
I knew who I was going to be talking to.
I met Ray Charles at 14. He was 16. But he was like 100 years older than me.
Quincy, my buddy. My buddy. Quite so true.
How'd you meet?
We met, it wasn't like the film. We met up at the Elks Club. The Elks Club is where we all went after all of the paying jobs, whatever they were, whenever they came. That's where we went to just play bebop for jam all night for free.
Musically speaking, you've bridged so many genres and generations also. I understand that Lionel Hampton was the person who gave you your big break. I want you to tell me not just about Lionel Hampton, but also about Gladys Hampton, because I understand
Gladys,
she stayed on top of you.
She was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. I was very upset, though, when I got thrown off the bus, because I really wanted to go on the road. That's all I cared about.
Thrown off
said,
the bus?
Honey, what's that child doing on here, Lionel? She said, honey, get off of this bus and go back to school. We'll talk later. And I sat on the bus for 4 hours so they wouldn't change their mind. And, boy, it didn't happen.
Tell me the story.
At 15 years old, he saw a piece of music I'd written called Sweet for the Four Winds. I didn't know what I was doing. he wanted to hire me as a trumpet playing arranger, and I just jumped on the bus. I didn't want to tell my parents or anybody. I didn't want anybody to change their mind, because it had been my dream to be a member of a big band. And Lionel Hampton at that time was bigger than Duke Ellington, or Basie, and Louis Armstrong. They all worked with Joe Clayson at Associated Booking, and he was the number one band. He worked 300 days a year, you know. And it was the most exciting, educational, learning experience I've ever had in my life.
So you went back to Berkeley to study music. It wasn't called Berkeley at the time.
It was the Schillinger House of Music. That was a Russian mathematician. My teacher said, because you're going to learn everything everybody ever did with the 12 notes, from Stravinsky to Elvin Berg to Duke Ellington, everybody. I spent 28 years to hone my craft so I could write any kind of music. And I learned so much by working as a conductor and arranger for, you know, Billy Eckstein and Ray Charles and Peggy Lee, with no pressure on me. And in those days, we didn't care about money or fame. We couldn't care less.
Moonlight and love songs, never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy and hate. Woman,
what's the key to arranging for a particular singer?
Number one is understanding the range of every instrument singularly and then collectively. I look at everything I do in life with my foundation, everything, business organizations, everything like a big band. Four trumpets, four trombones, five saxophones, a rhythm section of a piano, bass, drums, and guitar. And I look at the whole world like that. I think of all these people doing different things but doing exactly the same thing. Playing one composer's music and one conductor, they're all thinking about one thing. 16th notes, 8th notes, whole notes, and half notes. No stock markets, none of that stuff. They're thinking about one thing. And it's a lot of power. It's a lot of energy. Nobody's thinking about anything but what that music is going on.
Help me understand how you would arrange music for a particular singer to make sure that you captured the essence of that performer and perhaps even took them to a different place.
So that the whole thing is to try to make them sing even better than they sang before, and that's asking for a lot with a Sinatra or Nat Cole or Ray Charles, you know. Like Frank used to say, you know how to press my buttons, you know. That certain major seventh note that you go to a minor seventh on, you know, just certain things musically that I know that emotionally it turns him on, because it turns me on too, you know. So that's how I first got to work with Frank, you know. We got a message one day while I was in France that said Grace Kelly's office called from Monaco and they would like you to bring 55 musicians down to work with Frank Sinatra. And I almost fainted, you know, because you don't call up Frank and say, I'd like to work with you. It doesn't work like that. You have to wait till he calls you. 4 years later, I guess 1962, I get a call. He says, Q, and nobody ever called me that before. He called from Kauai. He was directing a film called None But the Brave, a military film. Would you consider doing an album with Basie and I? I said, man, is the Pope a Catholic? Are you kidding? You wait all your life to work with Sinatra and Basie, and it doesn't get any better than that.
We have the song More from one of those sessions. And as we listen, I want you to talk me through this. You know, you hear the strings there. It's very zesty.
Oh, I love it. Emotion lotion.
More than the greatest love the world has known.
Take me inside that room.
It was amazing. He had just finished this movie, and there was 60 of the extras, Japanese extras that were in the film. He had all of them there. He had Dean Martin there, about 30 of his other friends there, and it was just fantastic. But, you know, I was really on the spot, but I didn't feel any pressure. I didn't at all, you know, because I felt love, and I felt comfortable, and I felt a part of something really important and special to me, and I was ready for it, and he was ready for it.
I know I never lived before, and my heart is very sure, no one else could love you more.
And it's astounding. He had his music sheets in a little manila folder, and as conscientious and sensitive and excited to get to work as everybody else was. Basie couldn't wait, I couldn't wait, he couldn't wait. And we just loved working with each other.
Love you more.
Quincy Jones went from arranging to producing. As a record executive, he churned out several chart toppers. Always restless, he moved to producing films and TV shows in the 60s and the 70s. Through the 80s and the 90s, there were more hits. The Color Purple, Michael Jackson's blockbusters, humanitarian work in Africa. I asked him how he's able to keep up that pace.
I don't know, probably from not having a mother. There's a great book out called Too Soon Old, Too Late Smart. And one of the things in it, it said that I love, it said the statute of limitations has expired on all childhood traumas. Get over it, get on with your life, and enjoy your life, you know. And so very early in life, my mother was in a mental home, and I had a stepmother and a bunch of strange people taking care of me and my brother. And I made a deal. I said, I want to make music, my mother. So if I probably had a great family, who knows, I might have been a sad musician. We'll never know. And I've never been happier in my life. It's that like dreams that we would never even imagine, you know. 50 years ago, traveling to the South, you know, you just couldn't imagine it.
You know, before I let you go, I just want to sneak one last question. I'm going to do this because it's sort of a personal prerogative, because it allows me to talk about one of the songs that I really love from your library. You have moved across genres, from jazz to pop to R&B and to hip-hop. And as we listen to a song like Back on the Block, so I'm just curious about how you were able to do that, to sort of skid from one decade to another and one genre to another, and always sort of ride this sort of crest of cool from one generation to the next.
But
you managed to stay ahead of it instead of trying to follow behind it.
It's natural, though. It's just part of the way I am. You know, I like 360 people, 360 in every part of life, from food to love to music to helping kids, everything. I like all 360 of it. Sinatra used to say this every night: you live every day like it's your last, and one day you'll be right.
It has been such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for sharing your memories and your experiences and your time with us.
Thank you. And your heart is reflected in your voice.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Quincy Jones, his new book is The Complete Quincy Jones, My Journey and Passions. You can hear more of my interview with Quincy Jones. Just go to our website, npr.org/music.